The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to the How to Kill an Hour Hour, the half-hour edition brought to you by Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care. And now, without further ado, here's your host for the next 30 minutes, the one, the only, the Ed Man.
Oh yeah, welcome once again to the How to Kill an Hour radio show. I'm your host, the man with the plan, the Ed Man, here to give you some of the news for the past week. And the latest thing that's happened is the House has passed $15 an hour minimum wage, federally mandated. Of course, they have staggered it so you don't see the effects immediately. That way they can blame any effects that happen on somebody else. But if this bill gets passed in the Senate, then that means that by 2025, employers will be required to pay $15 an hour minimum wage. And if you don't pay it, then you will be in big, big trouble. And if you don't pay the fine or whatever the punishment is going to be and you refuse to stop doing business, they will take you to jail. And if you resist arrest, they will pull out the guns and they will make you pay $15 an hour minimum wage. I told the story, was it last week or the other week? And time is really flying nowadays. You know, as you get older, time goes faster. But I told my experience about how I went to McDonald's recently, the McDonald's over here on Atlantic, and my friend was there with me. And I said, hey, friend, I'll get your lunch. What do you want to have? And so I ordered the lunch, and he said, same thing that you're having. And the lady immediately said, I hate when people do that. And she looked very annoyed. She didn't say it like, you know, like joking around. She was just speaking off the top of her head there and insulted my buddy. I said, yeah, he's a terrible friend, which is not true. So then, or maybe even before that, she was asking me how I was going to pay. And I said I was going to pay by a credit card. And she kept trying to, like, trick me into saying I was going to pay in cash. I don't know. It was kind of weird. And finally, I said, how do you want me to pay? And she said, well, the credit card machine is acting up. But she said it in much more negative terms than that. It's really hard to describe the attitude that this person has. She really did not want to be there. And she didn't seem like she wanted us to be there either. So the thought of my coughing up, you know, more money for my food to make sure that this person gets $15 an hour doesn't really sit well with me, just from a personal point of view. But even if I love the world, you know, and I bought into what the liberals say, that everyone should get a fair wage. Well, what is a fair wage? And if you think everyone should be paid a living wage, then what about all the people who can't make it at $15 an hour? The people who are worth $5 an hour, $8 an hour, $10 an hour, $12 an hour, all of them are now going to be competing with people who have the skills to carry a $15 an hour job. So even if the person behind the counter was lovely to me, which is not the case, and that is a single experience. I understand that. But, I mean, you could look in your own mind and see the history of how people treat you in the, you know, in the fast food industry and the cashiers and stuff. And, you know the mindset of many of those people. And I don't think there's anything wrong with working those jobs. I'm just saying that you have to realize that these people are going to be competing against others who are at this point making $15 an hour. In short, they're not going to be able to cut it. All right, so no big deal if they can't compete with other people at $15 an hour. They can just go ahead and work somewhere for less money. But what you forgot is that it's illegal for somebody to hire them at $10 an hour now. So what are they going to do? Well, I guess they have to apply for welfare benefits, and the money's got to come from somewhere. And this philosophy is just making the country poor, because now these people are going to be getting benefits without the equivalent output of work they're not trading their labor anymore. At $15 an hour, it's going to be harder to open a business for a new business to be able to pay that, you know, right off the bat. It's crazy. So then we wonder where all the jobs are going, right? We wonder why there is less people working. We wonder why there is less available opportunities. And then you've got the Bernie Sanders crowd. Bernie Sanders, who doesn't even pay his campaign staff $15 an hour, wants to force everybody else to do it.
Well, I'm not going to do it unless everybody else does it. That's not fair. $15 an hour on these idiots? You got to be kidding me. All they do is sit around on Facebook and eat chips all day. Looking at their cell phones. Get some work done.
You know, and what's funny is if you try to explain to a liberal and you tell them very logically, very sensibly, you know, after you get through all the, after you get them to pipe down from accusing you of hating poor people or whatever, but once you actually get into a conversation with one of them, if it's possible, then, you know, you start going through things logically, right? And, for instance, you say, well, you know, when somebody first starts, maybe you want to hire them, but they don't have the skills yet. And so you want to give them some on-the-job training. Well, your options are either to pay them $15 an hour or nothing. Because it is funny, you can have an internship program where you pay them zero, but you can't give them $5 an hour, right? Because that's illegal. So then... another argument that they have is, well, if you can't afford to pay $15 an hour, then you shouldn't be in business. I mean, this is insane. Now, liberals hate rich people. But what you're doing with that attitude is you're ensuring that only rich people are able to start businesses. Because people who have already made it and know how to run a business, it's probably kind of easy for them, right? So they can teach their kids and how to do it. But for other people... they have to figure it out. Business owners aren't some magical breed or something. A business owner is just a normal person who decided to open a business. They have to figure it out too. They don't instantly become good right out the chute at running a business. They're going to fail probably multiple times before they kind of get off the ground. So just by saying, well, if you don't know what you're doing, where you can pay them some arbitrary amount that I say you should be paying them, then you don't deserve to be in business. That has no bearing on reality. Why would you set and it, well, I mean, then I could say if you don't know how to run a business well enough to pay someone $50 an hour, then you shouldn't have a business. I mean, just saying that doesn't have any impact on the way the world works. When you start, you've got to figure out how to run a business. You can't instantly be making so much money with your business that you can pay anybody any amount that some third party says that you should be paying. Does that make sense what I'm saying? So right now, federal minimum wage is at $7.25 an hour. So that person could say, well, if you don't run a business well enough that you can pay someone $7.25 an hour, then you don't deserve to be in business. Now, they want to jump it up to $15 an hour, which is a more than 100% increase. And now the argument is the same. Well, if you don't know how to pay somebody $15 an hour, then you don't deserve to be in business. First of all, it's none of their damn business what you pay somebody. I mean, really, it's not. If you look at it from a moral point of view, the idea that you can tell somebody what to pay them is insane. That's between you and the other person. It's the equivalent of telling somebody who wants to work for $8 an hour, they're not able to do that. They're not allowed to do that. If somebody is, you know, doesn't have a lot of skill and they feel like eating that day, forget about this is the amount of money you have to make in order to live comfortably. How much do you need to make in order to just eat? You ought to be able to work for that. You shouldn't have a third party be able to come in and say, no, you're not allowed to make any money. Unless you can make $15 an hour, unless you've got the skills to make $15 an hour, you shouldn't be working. That's what they're saying. So it's not, you can't just look at it at the side of the employer. You've got to look at all parties involved. And if somebody doesn't have the skill to be working at $15 an hour, that person is now out of work. And, you know, when I discuss that with a liberal, you know what it finally comes down to? They say, well, the people who are working make more money, so good for them. So then they don't really care about the poor people. They want a virtue signal, and they want to act as if they're doing good for the nation. But they're not. They're making it worse for everybody. So they say it's not going to make it through the Senate. I mean, that's probably true. But it's pretty scary to me to think that they could get that close to it. That it passed the House, it just shows how close to the precipice we are standing.
Precipice.
Well, the girlfriend woke up there. You feeling better? She said she just wanted to say the word precipice. It's a nice word. But if these idiots get in office, you're going to see a lot more jobs evaporate. And then they're going to blame greedy rich people, right? I mean, like, rich people want their phones to be answered by somebody in India. Like, they're like, you know what? I really just feel like screwing over the American worker. I feel like outsourcing all of my stuff to somewhere else. They don't want that. But, you know, economic reality demands that you have to eliminate certain jobs if you're not making a return proportionately for having them. Now, there are times when you can raise a minimum wage and effects don't really show. So, for instance, maybe the business automates things. And so that way they don't have to raise their prices because now they're saving the amount of money that they would have spent on those workers by automating their systems. But, you know, that's not probably good for everybody. I do think that automation is more efficient, but I think that all things being equal, human beings would rather deal with other human beings. We don't like calling a place and getting the answering machine, right? Now, some of us, I don't know, do you like ordering off the kiosk better or talking to a person? I personally like talking to a person better than ordering through a kiosk. What about you?
It depends,
yeah. Well, on what? How user-friendly the kiosk is?
Sometimes the kiosk doesn't give you the same options that...
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes on a kiosk, it gives you the straight, you know, default method of ordering the food. But when you talk to a person, you say, hey, can I get rid of the lettuce or can I substitute it with something else? And, you know, so yeah, I guess it depends in some cases. But I think that if the job is done equally well by a person and a computer, then maybe I'd rather have the person, you know, because you can yell at them, right? Hey, you know what might be a great skit? If Bernie Sanders gets his minimum wage and then everything's automated and he's just like yelling at the kiosks. Yeah, I mean, automation is good. Hey, maybe raising minimum wage will make it easier. It will encourage everyone to automate. So maybe that would actually be better for the human race. Wouldn't that be ironic? I'm fighting minimum wage because I want to help people out. But maybe people will be helped out more by raising minimum wage, but not for the reason that liberals think, but because everything will be replaced by efficient computers. So maybe it is the way to go after all. Maybe I'm wrong about everything, huh? Now, I think the typical argument that people give against minimum wage is that it's going to make the price of everything go up. And that's true. I mean, if you really think about it, everything, the price of everything should go down because you get better at producing it or manufacturing it. And minimum wage does help drive the cost up. So that's an important argument too. But if you want to hit the argument from the standpoint that liberals are hitting it from, in other words, that it's going to help the poor, then the argument that I gave earlier is definitely the correct one, and it's true. You're going to create more poor people by raising the minimum wage. It's going to happen. So we've touched on automation here. I guess I can go to the story about Elon Musk. He wants to put implants in people's brains. This is from CNN Business. Elon Musk this week unveiled his most important sci-fi project thus far, a computer chip connected to exceptionally slender wires with electrodes on them, all of which is meant to be embedded in a person's brain by a surgical robot. The implant would connect wirelessly to a small behind-the-ear receiver that could communicate with a computer. It is is going to be controlled by an app. So that's pretty funny. Musk hopes the implant created by his brain-computer interface startup Neuralink could one day help quadriplegics control smartphones and perhaps even endow users with a sort of telepathy. Oh, that sounds nice, actually. Might want to get one of those. Like existing brain-machine interfaces, it would collect electrical signals sent out by the brain and interpret them as actions. That might be cool. Hey, but if you could hack into it, man, what if you could reverse the polarity or whatever, and you could control the person? What if the machine starts telling us what to do once they gain sentience? That's scary to think about. But Neuralink's promise of a brain-connected device that looks as nondescript as a hearing aid, the kind of thing you could hide with hair or a hat, is exciting scientists who have spent years working on this technology. It's kind of frightening to think of. Not the neural implant, but the excited scientists. Wow, they're actually, it says how another part of the story says that the idea of a brain-machine interface is not new. Scientists have been working on them for decades, and they have been implanted and tested in animals, such as monkeys as well as people. There are some FDA-approved deep brain stimulation devices meant for, among other things, controlling tremors in people with Parkinson's disease. Oh my goodness. Hey, I set my granddad on vibrate. And several tech companies, the article says, have worked on their own methods for connecting the brain to computers. Facebook, for instance, has worked on a non-invasive device to let you send text messages by thinking. Now, I don't think that particular device would work because I've never seen any text on Facebook that was made by someone who was thinking. You know, they have a picture of the device, the Neuralink robot for placing slender electrodes inside the brain. They have a picture of the robot, and it looks like, do you remember the scene in Star Wars where that device was going to be used to torture Princess Leia? Kind of looks like that a little bit. Just some weird, I don't know, chrome-looking things, and then what looks like a blade at the end of it. It is, it's not very pleasant-looking at all. And there's LED lights there. I don't know. Looks crazy. I am intrigued by the telepathic aspect of it. I could pull off some great tricks with that. You know, I could look at a light and point at it, and then the light dims, right? That'd be fun to play with your friends. I'm like, I point at the TV turns on, you know? Nothing good. I mean, I couldn't even, like, open the door probably unless I got it electronically wired, but it might be worth it. That would be neat, wouldn't it? Just think of everything. Hey, chair. And then it just comes up behind you and you just sit down, right? That would be nice. This implant is sounding better and better the more I think about it. I mean, who cares if it's like the mark of the beast or whatever? It's the end of the world's going to happen anyway, right? Might as well get some good usage out of my electronic devices, you know? Now, a quick word about Rand Paul and the 9/11 responders bill. So John Stewart has been kind of grandstanding here to get this bill passed, which, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think is in any danger of not passing. So I suppose it's good that he's bringing attention to this. I'm glad, but this is a bill for the 9/11 responders. So the first responders, a lot of them have been having trouble and health problems. And for years it was denied that this was a real thing. And then when the evidence just became overwhelming, they have created a bill that passed to give them billions of dollars of medical care. And I can't remember the exact amount of the bill, but there's still money left. So while it's important that they extend the bill, and I guess I am glad that John Stewart is doing this, even though John Stewart, I feel like he just inserts himself in a conversation needlessly sometimes, but hey, you know, if it gets the bill passed, I suppose it's worth it, right? But now Rand Paul has blocked it in the Senate, and everybody is mad at him, of course. And of course, Jon Stewart is mad at him, obviously. And Rand Paul is saying, well, you know, we need to, we should pass a bill, but we should also, when we pass it, take funding away from something that is not as important so that we can keep a balanced budget. I think that's very intelligent. Now, the counter argument to that is that we've blown so much money on unimportant things that something that's important like this, to make sure that they're, that the 9/11 responders are getting proper care, that, you know, that this, that there shouldn't be a debate. But again, there's still money in the original bill that's being spent. It's not like they're not getting medical care here. And while I don't like the idea that it's possible that the bill won't pass, I don't think there's any danger of it. And I do think it's important that any bill that passes, no matter how emotionally charged it is, we should cut spending somewhere else in order to be able to pay for it, especially an important bill like this. Now, they also are saying, well, of all the things to make your, you know, to grandstand on, why this bill? I disagree with that. I feel like Rand Paul has, I guess you could say, grandstanded on a lot of bills. Bills that were not that important and bills that were very controversial and that got a lot of public attention. I feel like this is just a normal way that he acts when you have something that has a lot of spending. And I think it's because of Jon Stewart being there now that this has gotten a lot of attention. So I don't know if Rand Paul is necessarily grandstanding here, although he is, you know, kind of making a big deal out of it. But, and I think it's actually pretty brave, because this is a bill everybody wants passed and everybody's mad at him right now. And Rand Paul and one other senator, I wonder who that other guy is. I'm trying to find his name, but I'll tell you, I would not have picked that particular hill to die on. I mean, if I was a senator, I would have just kept my mouth shut, man. I would not have the gonads to say we need to offset this bill by cutting spending somewhere else, which I believe that. I think that it's true. No matter how emotionally charged something is, if you want this, you know, terrific, amazing nation of ours to remain as great as it is, we have to employ fiscal responsibility. It must happen. But, you know, when you have something as emotionally charged as this, it is, it's a hard one. And the bill, compared to other things, the spending is not tremendous. I mean, it's tremendous if you think about it in sheer numbers. But I mean, compared to a lot of other things that have passed, it's $10 billion over 10 years, I believe. And Jon Stewart said, pardon me if I'm not impressed by your fiscal virtue signaling, I think is what he says. But the point isn't to impress Jon Stewart. The point is to actually be fiscally responsible. Although, I would not have had the guts to have stood up for that. Mike Lee is the name of the other senator. So, Rand Paul and Mike Lee are the two most hated senators in the entire world right now. Especially Rand Paul, because he's more in the public eye, being the son of Ron Paul and having run for president before. And right now I see a lot of hashtags saying, hashtag Rand Paul forgot. And he's also getting a lot of tweets, terrible tweets, by the way, and the first responders are mad at him, too. So I hope he doesn't need a first responder anytime soon. But, you know, a lot of the tweets against him are saying that he gave billions of dollars to millionaires and billionaires, you know, in tax cuts. Why do liberals not understand that they understand that if you raise tariffs against Mexico or China, that's going to raise the price of goods here in the United States. But they don't understand that if you raise taxes on corporations, that is also going to raise prices. And they don't understand that if you raise the price of working, that's going to decrease the number of jobs that are available. It's funny, they don't have that connection in their brain. So even though I would have chosen this bill to make the stand on, being fiscally conservative is something that should be a matter of course,